Cool. Sweet, dude. Thanks for coming to the podcast.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm doing something new in this podcast. We're drinking this time. I'm definitely stealing Matt Fred's idea. No shame in that. Yeah. So
everybody likes to drink beer. So, I mean, not everybody likes to drink beer, but it's good to do if you like it. So,
yeah, it definitely adds a lot to the podcast, I think. I guess I should describe what I'm drinking or tell you what I'm drinking. I'm drinking Deschutes Black Butte Porter.
It's Black Butte. That's how you pronounce that word, B-U-T-T-E. It's Butte.
Well, it just looks like they misspelled butter, you know? I'm looking at it like Black Butter. No, it's not. It's Black. Yeah, it's Black Butte Porter. And do you know what you're drinking? We threw away the can already.
It's not milk stout. It's like a seasonal something, and I'm blanking on the name of it, but it's pretty good.
I'm going to take out the can from the trash can. Hold on.
Sounds good. Yeah, it's I picked it because it had notes of cardamom and things in there, and I'm a big fan of cardamom. Cardamom just like reminds me of Christmas. So here we have the can. It's Fade to Black Foreign Stout. Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah, I've had that also. It's really good. I had this beer last night called Shiner Cheer, which is their Christmas beer.
I think I've had that before. Yeah, it's pretty good.
I hate it.
Really?
I can't. It was just too Christmassy, I think. It was like too sweet, I think.
Maybe I haven't had it then, because like I'm not super into super sweet beers.
It's not okay. It's not like sweet, like.
Yeah.
But it's like I just didn't like it. I don't know.
Yeah, it happens. It happens.
Yeah. Anyways, well, thank you guys for joining us this episode. We have Mickey here. He's gonna share with us his story of how he converted to Catholicism. And we'll just see where the conversation goes. That's literally how I do this. So, why don't we? Why don't you just start with like who you are now?
Okay.
Just introduce yourself. Okay. Just brief facts. Yeah. And then we'll just take it from there.
Sounds good. Yeah. I'm Mickey. I am 28. I've been Catholic now for going on 8 years. It'll be 8 years in May 1st. I grew up in a Lutheran household, and I came into the church when I was in college.
What's like very briefly? What's the difference between Lutheran and Catholic?
I mean, the biggest difference is the authority. Just authority of the church. There is no pope or anything in the Lutheran church. They have bishops, but the bishops are elected for terms, and so it's not a it's not once you're ordained a bishop, you're always a bishop. And even then, there's not really ordination because they don't believe in holy orders as a sacrament. So, yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing. There isn't, like, a single authority governing the Lutheran church at all. And so things change a lot.
Cool. I think, no, that's great. Can you share how you went about converting?
Yeah, absolutely. So like I said, growing up I was Lutheran. I'm originally from a town called Walkersville out in kind of central Maryland, and growing up, whenever my family would drive north into Pennsylvania up to Gettysburg, we would pass by what later became my alma mater, Mount St. Mary's University. And there was this giant gold statue up on the mountain of Our Lady. And when I was a kid, I was just super fascinated by the statue. Just every time we drove past, I would ask my parents to like point it out when we were getting close. Because, you know, I was a kid, I wasn't actually paying attention to the road. I just always wanted to see it, and I was always super fascinated by it. Looking back, there came a time when my parents like stopped driving past the mount. Whenever we take a back way, which I mean ultimately wasn't much faster or shorter. It was just not past the statue. And so I kind of always had that fascination there. And then when I was in high school, my dad was looking for a job that would kind of help with college tuition for myself and my sister, younger sister. And so he was looking for to work at a university or a college somewhere. And he applied to a lot of different places. He actually flew out here to the Twin Cities and for a lot of the Lutheran schools out here. And I know he got offered several jobs, but the job that he ended up taking was at Mount St. Mary's because we lived 20 minutes away. We wouldn't have to move. My mom wouldn't have to get readmitted to a bar association somewhere because both my parents are lawyers. So it was just kind of the most logical thing. It was the least expensive option for my family at the time. And so, yeah, my dad started working there. And so it was just kind of a foregone conclusion that I would go there for college. Technically there are other places I could have gone because it's part of a network of colleges that have like tuition, like not forgiveness, but like lower tuition or free tuition for, children of university employees. So like there's a bunch of private colleges that do that. But the Mount was just made the most sense. So I ended up there. I was there for a year. And so my freshman year was like 2008, 2009. And so that's when the economy tanked. And yeah. So the economy tanked and my dad was like the last person hired in his department. And so he was the first person to be let go. And so this happened probably January, February of my freshman year of college. And it just kind of made me really angry. Just the injustice of it all. My dad was good at his job. It was just kind of sucked that he had to lose his job, basically. Once he did, he made it known to me, he and my mom made it known to me that like, because I didn't really have a choice when I was going to starting out college, they'd let me choose somewhere else to go if I wanted to. And at first, when I first got the news, I was still kind of reeling and I didn't like the idea of moving. It hadn't really sunk into me, the injustice of it all, of my dad losing his job. And so I didn't think of leaving for a couple months. And then towards the end of the school year, I was like, I do kind of want to leave because I convinced myself that the Mount wasn't the place for me. I was telling myself, it was too small, it was too close to home, it was too Catholic. Those are kind of my, those are the things that I focused on really heavily. It wasn't too small. It's it's a great size college, super small classes, and it was actually really good. The too close to home didn't really matter because it's not like I went home or my parents visited me at anyway. So it's not like that didn't really change things. It really isn't too Catholic. There's a good Catholic identity there, but it's not like Franciscan or Christendom or something. It's not one of those super Catholic colleges. There's a lot of non-Catholics there and they're perfectly comfortable going there. So for my sophomore year, I transferred and I started at a college called Wittenberg University. It's a Lutheran school out in Springfield, Ohio. And just kind of immediately, I didn't really feel comfortable there. And there's really no one thing that I can point to tangibly to say why I didn't like it. Because I had good friends. I had good professors. I enjoyed the classes that I was taking. At the end of the day, I'm still not as close to the people who I met there. I'm still in contact and I'm still friends with those people. But it just wasn't the right place for me. I just felt uncomfortable just all the time. I just didn't like it. I didn't like being there. And every break, I would rush home because the breaks ended up lining up a lot with the breaks at Mount St. Mary's. But I was usually able to leave early enough from Witt to drive home and see some folks for a couple hours before they left the next day. So I did that a lot. And then it was really around mid-October when I decided that I was going to leave WIT and then go back to the Mount. Because I realized that I wanted to be with those good friends that I made my freshman year.
Okay.
And, you know, I wouldn't have to reapply anywhere. Mm-hmm. Like, I was still technically, I wasn't enrolled, but I was on the books. Like, I didn't need to get reaccepted to the Mount. Okay. It was just like, all I had to do was re-enroll, and it wasn't a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah. Quick question. Something you said kind of caught my attention. Okay. You said that Mount St. Mary's was too Catholic, which then makes me ask, like, how Lutheran were you at the time?
That's a really good question, actually. So my freshman year, college.
Okay.
I think I put it on a little bit more than I really was. Mm-hmm. Like, I was pretty active in youth ministry, in the youth ministry at my parish growing up, my Lutheran parish growing up. Did mission trips, you know, did youth conferences, things like that. I was pretty active, and I enjoyed it. But, you know, and I'd had a conversion experience. I would say, like, I had a real, there was a time where I had really encountered the Lord, and I desired a personal relationship, but I didn't really know how to go about it.
Can you explain that moment?
The moment? Okay. So, it was on a mission trip, in 2007. We went to, the Northern Cheyenne Indian Reservation in, Lame Deer, Montana, for a week with a company called Youth Works. Actually based here in the Twin Cities. They do a lot of good work, but they work mostly with Protestant churches. Yeah, it was a mission trip there. And there was one night where we had this kind of prayer ministry thing where our youth minister, like the youth minister of each group, like went and washed the feet of all of the youth that were there.
Okay.
That, in addition to some of the reflections that we had, that we were given to reflect on that night, just really kind of broke me down and showed me that there is a God that loves me and that desires me individually, and that, you know, that my youth minister was somebody who she loved me and she wanted the best for me as well. And just, you know, seeing her, the compassion and love in her eyes for all of us. You know, I saw Christ in her at that instance. And so that was a real conversion moment for me. But there wasn't any follow-up really. I can't blame anyone. It was just, you know, there's not follow-up in a lot, for a lot of places, really. Like, there's not a program that you can follow to, like, encourage people to really deepen their prayer life and deepen their relationship with Christ. You just kind of have to walk with folks. And it's, you know, high school was super busy for me, and so I, you know, would only see folks on, like, youth ministry folks on the weekends, and so it wasn't like there was no convenient way to, like, walk with us. And so I don't want to blame anyone. It was just kind of, I didn't know what to do. And so nothing really changed all that much.
Can you break it down a little bit more, like, that moment? Like, you said they gave you meditations and reflections. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what those were?
I honestly don't know. I mean, it's been more than 11 years now. Like, I really couldn't tell you what those reflections were on. I mean, I'm sure part of it was, you know, John's account of the Last Supper, where, you know, Christ washes the feet of the apostles. But yeah, I don't remember anything else. I don't remember any of the other things. I don't remember the song that was playing. I don't remember anything. Yeah.
Were you forced to go to these things, these mission trips and youth groups and stuff?
No, I really wasn't. It was, there was a time in probably middle school where I didn't enjoy going, like, we had, like, Sunday school up through eighth grade, and I just didn't really like my Sunday school teacher in eighth grade. Okay. I mean, she's nice enough. Like, I didn't like her methods, and I didn't, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just not somebody who I enjoyed spending time with at the end of the day. And so my mom said, you know, I mean, I'm not going to force you to go to Sunday school, but if you're not going to go to Sunday school, then you need to go to youth ministry. Mm-hmm. Or you need to, like, start attending, like, services every Sunday.
Sorry.
Super popular. Sex. You're super popular, Koji. It wasn't... My mom just wanted me to be involved. She didn't want me to, drift away. Because I did have good friends that I had made through Sunday school. Mm-hmm. And so she didn't want me to lose those folks because I didn't go to school with them. Because they went to different schools in the area. But we all just went to the same church. And so she didn't want me to drift away from those people. And she just kind of wanted to make sure that I had that community. But again, my mom wasn't very well catechized, and so she wasn't able to do a very good job of catechizing me. But she knew that she has a relationship with Christ, and she knew that it was good and something that I needed. Yeah. You know, both of her kids need it. Everyone needs it. But, you know, so she did her best to encourage that. But, you know, when there's just a failure in catechesis, it's kind of floundering. People don't really know what to do. And so my mom just, she made sure that I kept going, doing something church related. So I wasn't ever forced. I didn't feel forced. It was a choice that I got to make. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed all of, like, the mission trips and the youth conferences and stuff. That was something that I just always enjoyed. So, yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I think that can relate to a lot of people. And it's funny because I don't really know a lot of Lutherans. I mean, right now I just know tons of Catholics. And it's kind of cool hearing that same experience is kind of universal, like the youth group and the, you know, Sunday school, and, you know, it's still very similar. Even the parents, like, I know my parents weren't really catechized either, but my mom knew that it's a good thing. You know, it's kind of like an easy decision, like, oh, do a church thing, it's good for you. Like, that's like, you know, eat your vegetables kind of thing, you know? So yeah, that's cool. Okay. So I want to fast forward now to the, the moments that led up to you, like, questioning the Lutheran faith and going into the Catholic faith.
Perfect. Yeah. So, it kind of starts with me coming back to the Mount, my sophomore year. So the second semester of my sophomore year in January, I come back to Mount St. Mary's. And I had gotten a position as a NRA, a residence assistant. So I got a dorm room to myself. And so I get there in January before everyone else, and I'm setting up my room. You know, and it's college, right? So I'm putting up Christmas lights because that's what you do. And, you know, there's conveniently a free nail in the wall holding up a crucifix at the Mount. And so, like, there's a crucifix in every dorm room. And, like, they don't tell you how to keep it up, but it has to be there at the end of the year, right? So my plan was to, like, put the crucifix on my desk, hold on to it, put it back at the end of the year. But so I'm up on the chair, taking it down, and something falls from behind the crucifix, and in my kind of, like, lack of knowledge of the Catholic Church, I assume you put these things behind crucifixes. Everybody puts these things behind crucifixes, like the small little metal. And I was like, okay, I guess I've seen Catholics wearing these around their necks. I guess they just put them places, whatever. So I was tried for about a half hour to put it back so that I knew how to do it when I left the room at the end of the semester. And so after a half hour, like, I just give up because it wasn't something that was, like, sitting on the crossbar or on the top. It was definitely behind the crucifix, but I have no idea how it was put up there. Like, they must have balanced it somehow or something. I don't know.
Super elaborate.
Yeah. I was like, I don't know who did it. I don't know how it happened.
Yeah.
Looking back on things, that it wasn't that day, but it was after that moment where I decided, like, I started, like, questioning, like, what would the social ramifications be of me becoming Catholic? It was more like, how would my family react? How would my friends react? Things like that. And, like, eventually I just decided, like, I didn't notice this medal behind the crucifix. So I'm just going to hold on to it and keep it as a memento, because it had Mary on it. And I'm like, you know, Mount St. Mary's, like, this one looks kind of like the statue. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm just going to hold on to this and, like, keep it. And, you know, it'll be a memento of my time at the Mount. I didn't think anything of it at all. I threw it at my desk and kind of forgot about it. Okay. But that semester, like I said, I thought about the social ramifications of becoming Catholic. What does it mean to become Catholic? How would it change my social life, pretty much?
Why did you start thinking about that?
I don't know. I don't know. I just know that I hadn't had any of those thoughts before I decided to keep that medal. And I did have them after I decided to keep that medal. Weird. definitely weird. And at one point, it was Ash Wednesday and that year, and I was like, I really wanted to go to service, like go back to my home church for Ash Wednesday. But just how my classes were that semester, I wasn't able to drive home.
Wait, Lutherans also have?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So Lutherans are much better at, like, getting a nice, distinct cross on the forehead, so.
I should go to.
I've actually seen some pretty good distinct crosses from Catholics, too. It's just, like, the pastor I had growing up, he was very, very deliberate about getting, like, nice and dark, good paste from the ashes, mm-hmm. and, like, nice, distinct cross.
He's like a Bob Ross enthusiast. I'm the devil out of it.
I'm not sure. He was very good at, like, getting a nice distinct cross. And so I wanted to go to Ash Wednesday service, but I wasn't able to. So I ended up at the Ash Wednesday Mass at the Mount. Didn't receive, don't worry. I went with some friends just because I wanted to prepare for Lent. It's
cool.
Ash Wednesday is a great, like, time to prepare for Lent. Anyway, so that was kind of my semester. There's at one point where started going out with this girl who I had met at a summer camp. We both worked at this camp, and I had expressed interest in her, she was interested in me, but she couldn't date me at when I first expressed interest, and so I backed away. And then out of the blue one day, she, like, messaged me and started texting me and was like, you know, I do like you. I think we should start dating. Like, we should, you know, do this. So this is, like, end of January, beginning of February. And it was, like, Saturday or a Sunday when she texted me. I went with my family for dinner, which is kind of like the catalyst moment for me. Or at least the part that I remember the most, because it was, like, very distinct. I was at an Olive Garden, if that.
Nice.
She went to a different college than me, so, like, I didn't get a chance to see her. Literally a week later, she had gone out. We had texted a lot, like, every day, and talked every day for a week. And then, like, the next Sunday, she had gone out the night before with some friends. The next Sunday, she calls me after I, like, text her good morning or whatever, and says, you know, I can't actually, like, date you. And, like, this isn't something that's going to work. And I'm like, she said, I'm not good for you, or something like that. And I'm just like, so I've got this, like, week of, like, getting, like, being fine, like, beforehand, being fine with not being with this girl, a week of, like, pretty intense, like, conversation and whatever, and then nothing. And so, like, that's important for later. Okay. Because after that semester, that summer, I'm working at the same camp. She's there again. So I'm working with this woman who, I didn't know how to respond to her. Like, I didn't know how to, like, be normal around her. Cause, like, it was just, you know, she'd hurt me pretty badly. Right. Yeah. And she's also like just a really flirtatious person, like a really flirtatious personality. And so like that was hard to deal with all summer. You know, being around other guys and being her being flirtatious with them and also with me. And just like, I just have no idea, you know, how she's dealing with these things. And at one point there was a particularly rough night where I forget what she had done, but she had done something that just like really hurt my heart. And I was just feeling like pretty worthless and just not like not in a good headspace. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sitting down in my tent on my cot, and out of the blue, I decide to ask Our Lady for her intercession, just because I didn't feel like. I don't know why. It was really just kind of out of the blue. I needed comfort, and she was the person I asked. You know, I reached out in prayer, and you know, I said, "Mary, I need help right now." Mm-hmm. And just kind of had an immediate sense of comfort and peace, and like feeling like I was. Like receiving a hug. Like it was like I didn't feel anything physical, but like that kind of like, you know, that release of chemicals in your brain that you get when you get a hug from somebody that you like, you know, just that you know loves you. And so I was like, it was such a profound experience that I realized I needed to figure out what everything, like what this whole Catholic thing was about, because like you know, Lutherans don't ask the saints for intercession or anything. They don't focus on Mary except for Advent and Christmas. So I needed to just figure things out. I needed to figure out what the Catholic thing was after that. So I'd made the decision to that summer after that experience that I would join RCIA, because my campus every fall semester they would send out an email saying if anyone is interested in learning more about the Catholic Church, or if you haven't been confirmed and you would like to be, we have an RCIA program here on campus through campus ministry.
Wait, was it hard for you to get to that decision of, oh wait, let me actually go to RCIA? Because that's like from the moment in your, you know, when you prayed for Mary's intercession, having that really profound experience, to saying, all right, I'm going to take classes. What was that like?
Well, for me, it wasn't a difficult decision to decide to go to RCIA, because I'd read the emails in the 2 years previous, and it was very clear that it wasn't a commitment to become Catholic. Mm-hmm. It was a classes to learn about what it means to be Catholic. That was kind of how it was presented. And like, you have the option to be confirmed at the end of the year if that's something that you want.
Okay.
And so for me, it was really like I had it in my head that like I knew what it meant to be a Lutheran. Again, I wasn't well catechized, so I didn't really, but I had it in my head that it was like, I know what it means to be a Lutheran. I need to figure out what it means to be Catholic. I need to learn so that I can compare the two and make a decision, because there's got to be something to this Catholic thing if I can ask for help from Mary and she'll give it. If that happens, but that's not something that we focus on in the Lutheran Church, there has to be something to this Catholic Church that I don't know much about. Okay. So yeah, I start RCIA, and the kind of curriculum was kind of going through the creed. We kind of start with the creed, like the major points of Christianity, what it means to be a Christian. And at first, for the first several weeks, it didn't make much sense to me to convert, because I was like, everything that I'm learning now is stuff that I have been taught and believe already as a Lutheran. So for a while, it didn't really seem to make much sense. And I was like, it'd be a lot of hassle. Like could alienate my family, my friends. Like not all of my friends, cause I had some good Catholic friends, but like some of the friends that I cared a lot about, it would alienate them. So, I which is kind of like, this is interesting. I'll keep going. You know, mm-hmm. I enjoyed the deacon who was assigned okay. from the seminary. So like, Mount St. Mary's also has a seminary attached, and there's always a transitional deacon assigned to campus ministry as kind of as part of their pastoral year. And so I liked, you know, I liked Deacon Adam. I liked you know, I liked Father Brian, who was the chaplain. I liked Anne-Marie, who was the assistant director of campus ministry. I liked everybody. I enjoyed the classes. It was interesting. So I kept going. And the mid to end October, it was about a year after I had decided to come back to the Mount, we ended up having our class on Mary. So we went through the dogmas that surround Mary, you know, who she is within salvation history, you know, she's the new Eve, things like that. What does the Immaculate Conception mean? Why do we say that she was assumed? Why are these things dogmas? Why are these things that we have to believe as Catholics? And really it all made sense. Like, it just kind of like, yeah, okay, this makes sense. This is a reasonable extension. This makes sense. Like, it wouldn't make sense to not believe this, and to claim to be Christian. It was presented in that way. Mm. And at the end of class, the person who was teaching it, she had gone through RCA, a couple years before. She was a student at the Mount. She was the one who was actually teaching it because she has a real love for Our Lady. And at the end, she started talking about devotions to Mary. And she talked a little bit about specifically the Miraculous Medal and how, you know, it's credited with all these miracles, and which is why it's called the Miraculous Medal, how it was given to St. Catherine Labouré, and just kind of the beauty of the Miraculous Medal. And then she handed a Miraculous Medal to all of us for us to keep at the end of class. And as I'm looking at it, I'm realizing that I've got one of these. It fell from behind a crucifix the last semester. And at that point, I kind of knew that I needed to actually convert. It was something where it's like, this is, like, I knew it in the back of my mind, but I wasn't able to accept it yet. I wasn't able to say, okay, this is something I need to do. Mm-hmm. Kind of keep going to RCA, feeling more and more like, yes, I do need to be Catholic. There's too many coincidences here. I end up talking to that woman who had taught the class, who was, student there, and I told her that story, like the story of finding the medal, deciding I needed to do RCA because of the answered prayer, and then her like giving out the medals and being like, me being like, oh wow. So yeah, I tell her about that, and I ask her if she'd be my confirmation sponsor. And she says yes, and she wants to, you know, encourage me to deepen my relationship with Our Lady, because it was clear that, you know, Our Lady was reaching out to me and wanted a relationship with me. And so she starts bringing me once a week to meetings of the Militia Immaculata, which is founded by Maximilian Kolbe, that boy right there. You know, praying the rosary once a week, starting to pray it a little bit more often. And then I decide to consecrate myself to Our Lady through the Militia Immaculata, their consecration prayers, and join the militia in December. So, like, they had their consecration on the Feast of the Immaculate Conception in December. From mid to end of October, I get the second Miraculous Medal by, you know, December 8th. Excuse me. December 8th? Is that the Feast of the Immaculate Conception? I should be better at knowing what date that is. But, I join the Militia Immaculata, consecrate myself to Our Lady in December. and then just kind of keep going to RCA and keep learning more. Like, I've at this point, I've decided to become Catholic, and you know, I need to collect some of the necessary, it's like my baptismal certificates and things like that. But then I'm confirmed May 1st, 2011.
What did your parents think?
That's a good question. When I finally told my parents, I told my mom first because I knew she would be much more kind of accepting of it. Mm-hmm. She's always just kind of been, I don't want to say hands off, but more always supportive of whatever myself or my sister wanted to do. So she was, you know, she trusted that I had done my due diligence and like research or whatever, and that I was, yeah, making a decision that was right for me. My dad, on the other hand, my dad grew up Lutheran. My mom is kind of, you know, they've got open communion, so she grew up like Presbyterian, but my dad kind of grew up Lutheran, and there's this culture within old world German Lutherans, especially, there's just kind of a cultural anti-Catholicism. It's not necessarily, I don't want to say it's a hate, but it's kind of like, it's an institutionalized kind of anti-Catholicism. It's kind of like, you know, it's not nearly as bad as like the institutionalized like racism within the country, but that's the most like the closest similarity that I can find. It's not necessarily that like everyone who's Lutheran hates Catholics. It's more like, you know, there's microaggressions. That's kind of the best way to describe it. You know, just some like slurs, like, you know, papist and those kind of like, you know, classic anti-Catholic slurs that, you know. Yeah, so my dad was never openly hostile, but it was clear that he wasn't entirely on board with it. There's actually I went on a spring retreat called Kairos. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with Kairos, but part of the retreat is you get letters from people who love you. And the letter that my dad wrote me, he said something like, now that you're jumping the Tiber, or like, it was something rude. And like, you know, he said he loved me in one paragraph, and the next one, he's like, you should read this whatever by Luther, you know, some, you know, bullshit. Sorry, I don't know if you're cool with cursing on this. And it was just like, it was like, it kind of ruined the retreat for me, because it's like, it was me kind of, you know, really embracing the Catholic faith and everything. And then, yeah, I got that from my dad, and it's just like, man, this isn't great. But they did both come to my confirmation. Like, they're both there. You know, we had like a dinner beforehand kind of reception thing with the families. Both my parents came to that, and you know, they're courteous and everything. But my dad was never openly hostile, never tried to forbid me or anything, but it's clear, like, it's still clear that he's not like okay with it. But at the end of the day, he's not going to church every Sunday, so he doesn't really get to tell me how to practice my faith. So, yeah.
Dude, that sucks. I'm sorry about that. Yeah, that's like,
it is what it is.
Yeah, you're like having this retreat. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. And then you get that letter, like the last thing you need. That sucks. Yeah, dude, thanks for sharing that. I wanted to ask you, for people who are listening, and I actually still don't know fully, like, part of the reason why, like, I love asking questions is because I still don't know everything. Mm-hmm. But my question is, what does it mean to consecrate yourself to Mary?
Okay.
And like, why is that important? Is it important? Is it needed? Is it not needed? You know, like, because I know for a lot of people, especially maybe even contemplating about liking the Catholic faith, not even converting, but just, you know, giving the Catholic faith more of a, okay, you know, all right, you're not all bad. Or like, especially with Mary, I think that's a lot of people's hangups is this Mary girl, who is she? Right. Mm-hmm. So yeah. What do you have to say?
So consecration is definitely not needed for our salvation at all. It is a completely optional thing. It is, you know, it's not a sacrament. It's not, I'm not going to say it's not important, but it's definitely not needed. If you don't have a desire, if you don't think it's something that's beneficial to you, mm-hmm. it's not something that, like, you're not, like, dooming yourself
yeah.
to damnation or anything to not consecrate yourself. It's just, at the end of the day, it is a way to, if you feel called to deepen your relationship with Mary, it's a way to do that, and also to kind of, I like how the Militia Immaculata puts it. It's the army of the Immaculate, right? Like Militia Immaculata, and it's like we're joining with the Militia Immaculata. It's joining an army. Our Lady's at the head of this army, and the Catholic understanding, of course, is that Our Lady desires nothing that Christ doesn't also desire. She's so we believe that she's so closely united to her son Jesus that she, it's almost as if her heart and his heart are one, that her desires will always coincide with his desires because she is subservient to God and ultimately to her son. And so, yeah. So Mary is at the head of this army, and we're going out as the Militia Immaculata and gaining souls for Mary, and ultimately for Mary to they go to Jesus, right? Anything that goes to Mary goes to Jesus. Yeah, consecration, all of them have, there's several, they all have slightly different promises and things like that, but ultimately what it means is, you know, anything that you gain for yourself, you're giving to Our Lady to dispense. Mm-hmm. So if you gain an indulgence,
yeah,
specifically, you can't buy indulgences. Don't worry, that's not a thing. That was expressly forbidden in the church, despite popular belief in Lutheran circles. So if you gain an indulgence, normally how the church sees indulgences is that it is something that you gain for yourself, and that it will relieve some or all of your debt to sin. So like, it's not saying like your sins are forgiven through confession, but you also need to be punished for your sins. Does that make sense? And so the guilt is removed at confession, but there's still, you know, your soul still needs to be purified from that desire to that sin.
Yeah.
And so that's how we see purgatory, right? Uh-huh. And so an indulgence either like takes time off of purgatory, essentially. It purifies your soul in a way, and like means like if you were to die after receiving indulgence for yourself and you were in a state of grace, so you'd been to confession, you received the Eucharist. If you were to die without sinning after you receive that indulgence, you're essentially going directly to heaven. That's how the church okay. believes. But instead of that, when you receive an indulgence, if you're consecrated to Our Lady, you give that grace, the grace of that indulgence, to Our Lady for her to do with what she will. Mm-hmm. So she might let it, you know, those graces work on you, or she might use it for somebody who's in purgatory or yeah. somebody who needs it. She's in heaven with Jesus. So she knows more about who needs those things than mm-hmm. Herself. And so, yeah, that's kind of the long and the short of it. Yeah.
Cool. Thanks. Yeah, I really like what you said, and yeah, that's true. It's not needed. I'm consecrated also, but it's been like 4 years since I haven't renewed it. I just did it once because I was still very new to my faith. And when I first started praying, I couldn't really do the whole Bible thing and the whole, like, I journaled because, like, I really needed to just externalize my thoughts. But majority of the time, I prayed through the rosary, like, every day for a whole year, basically. And yeah, I think I experienced what you described the first time you asked for Mary's intercession. I definitely felt a lot of comfort through praying the rosary. Till this day, I mean, not all the time. I pray the rosary every day now. I started again like a few months ago, I don't remember, but yeah. So what did I want to say? I guess my question is, or something I want to kind of bring up, is the fact that if it's not needed, why? Yeah, you know, like, why? And I know there's no like one answer, but I know for me specifically, the reason why Mary is so important to me is because I have such a close relationship with my own mother, and me exposing my heart to a female is easier than exposing my heart to a male. You know, and that male is Jesus. You know, I couldn't really, yeah, it was just a weird, it's just harder for me to do that. And so I think that's why, I mean, you even shared like your mom's more receptive or just more open, which then makes me, you know, just hearing your story just makes me assume that you probably have like a closer relationship, or you're more than comfortable to share certain things to your mother. And yeah. And another thing I heard is that, you know, like in the world, but like back in medieval times when people want to request something from the king, and if they want it to be really heard, they go to the queen, because the king has to listen to the queen. So, and we call Our Lady Queen of Heaven and Earth. So that to me also just makes lots of sense. Yeah, no, that's awesome. Okay, so you had a really cool conversion story with the miraculous medal just being behind a crucifix, and that's awesome. I guess my question is, like, for people out there who, what would you say to, let's say, a Catholic trying to convert someone? Yeah, like someone who's like, yeah, I'll just leave it at that, and I'll let you interpret that how you want.
Okay. I mean, first and foremost, if somebody has a relationship with Jesus, I don't think I would ever set out to convert them, mostly because, well, I do believe that the Catholic Church is the fullness of truth, and it is the surest way to heaven. I think there are other ways to get to heaven, but also I would never want to force the faith on someone. It's something that I would want them to discover for their own. And if they discovered it through me, perfect. Great. That's awesome. You know, I would want to dispel any misconceptions that they have about the Catholic Church, because there is a ton.
Yeah.
There are so many things that Protestants especially believe about the Catholic Church that are just patently false. And so I would want to dialogue more than I'd want to convert. I'd want to have that ecumenical conversation where, you know, I'm not immediately damning them and they're not immediately damning me. Yeah. Because there's been so much of that in the last 500 years since the Reformation, and it just it leads to strife, and it leads to anger, and it leads to hate, which ultimately, you know, leads to becoming a Sith, and that's not good. Those things lead to sin, and those things lead to the all of the strife that, you know, and sectarian violence that has occurred in the last 500 years between Catholics and non-Catholics. So at the end of the day, I just want to have a conversation. I wouldn't want to try to convert anyone. I wouldn't want to tell someone that the way they're doing things is wrong. Not because I don't think that they're wrong, but because that's not going to actually help. It's not going to get, like, you don't change your mind about something that you believe because somebody tells you that you're wrong flat out, you know, or that, yeah. So at the end of the day, I'd much rather have dialogue and allow them to ask questions more than I would ever want to set out to convert someone. It might be my hope, but it definitely wouldn't be something that I would be, I don't think it'd be something that I would try to actively do. But also, there's just pray for somebody, like pray that they receive the grace and, you know, the understanding of the church, who the Catholic Church is. Mm. Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you. That's great. I just want to apologize for everyone who has had a negative experience. maybe a Catholic that just likes to bash you and throw facts at you, and that turns me off. Oh, yeah. That makes me not want to be not.
That's the worst.
Yeah, that's the worst. Yeah, that makes me not want to claim Catholicism as my faith, amongst other things. Yeah, cool. Thanks, man. I think that's all we got for now. We've definitely touched on a lot of things that I think could be a podcast within itself. salvation history, Mary in general. What does that mean? Are we worshiping her? No, the answer is no. Yeah, I mean, that would be an awesome episode as well. But yeah, I just wanted to focus on your story and how that's come about. And so thanks. That's awesome. Yeah, I just want to end this by, how do I want to end this? Man, I'm going to end it in so many ways. Yeah, I don't know, actually. I think that's good. I hope you liked this episode, and we'll see you guys next time.